Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the virtual CISO moment. Rich A. Perry joins us. He is a cybersecurity and GRC professional. He is also the host and producer of the wildly popular Cyber JA podcast. Rich A., thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Greg. Awesome. I mean, thanks for having me on your show. I mean, I've always looked forward to having this conversation. And I must say that the VCISO moment falls into my top, five lists of podcasts that I normally listen every week. So, I mean, kudos to you on the work that you're actually doing with VCISO.
I appreciate that. And the check is in the mail. Thank you. We'll pay you for that. But I know we'll get into it a little bit more too, but I also love your podcast, Cyber JA. And there's so many good conversations in there. GRC is one of my favorite subjects. So it's because I think that particularly the governance side is something that we don't focus on too much, but I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. If we can start, just talk about your cybersecurity journey, how you got into IT and InfoSec, and what led you to where you're at today as a GRC professional, and B, what led you to start the podcast and what the mission is there?
Sure. I'm always, open to sharing the journey. I mean, so often we see the various achievements, but we really don't understand the journey. So I'm always grateful for opportunities like this to share. So if I should actually go back to the very genesis, and when I say genesis, I mean, as it relates to my career, I believe this started with, when I look back, with a friend when I was much younger, who was actually an artist, and he did pottery, canvas painting, all of these things, and he normally would give me a little bit of paint and other stuff to play around with in terms of trying to occupy my time. And this, I believe, fueled my love for tinkering with various things, which actually move on to, for example, playing around with electronic items, pulling apart various maybe remote cars, just about anything that I could actually get my hands on in terms of trying to find out what that curiosity, how this thing actually works. How does a radio, for example, back in the day actually produces sound and all of these things. So that actually fueled me to moving on further. Just a fast forward, when I actually was in high school, I majored in the technical areas. I was always, individual was always hands-on. I like the technical areas to be around. So I actually went into that era as it relates to my school journey because I had a love for, architecture, building, being outdoors, not constantly sitting behind a desk. I never saw myself at someone, sitting beside a desk. So I strongly believe that, I'm a person of faith that God actually had different plans for me in terms of the career path that I would choose. Prior to graduating from high school, I sent applications back then to the universities and colleges that were in my particular zone or region at the time to continue my studies. And it so happened that I sent out the applications to a university that dealt with architecture, one university that actually specialized in computing. And as far as I was concerned, I was fixed on architecture. I was expecting that the college rather would actually respond that actually specialize in IT. And I say, let me just jump on this thing to see what it's all about, because the university that's actually dealt with architecture was taking too long to respond. So I started my journey into management information system. It was the first program that was actually being started. I was in the first batch at that particular point in time. And for some reason, I started loving it, enjoying working with the computers, the systems, networks, all of these things actually coming together. And over a period of time, I was somewhat, what they would say, very nosy, very inquisitive. I normally would you see the network administrators or the, what they would say, the lab technicians back then during the university. And I was always crying over their shoulders. What is it that these guys are doing? These things seem so cool. They were typing in codes, and I said to myself, this is what I want to do. And I never stopped. I was like a pest to these people.
So, So that almost like opened this up for you by delaying the responses for the architecture school, and here you are. I mean, you ended up going through there's no such thing as coincidence, is what I was going to get at. Anyway, go on.
Yes, so I was like, I mean, I so inquisitive. I mean, trying to find out. And the thing is that the Management Information System program had a number of courses, networking, I mean, computer repairs, all of these things. And I was able to align to apply the theory to the practical based on my curiosity in terms of building relationships with these tech guys, to learn from them, to see the things that they're actually doing. And all of this alignment actually makes sense. So the other thing to say that if you stay in the barbershop long enough, then you will eventually get an haircut. So that eventually led to my first job. Can I tell you, my first job was straight out of college, right back into the same university, same college that I was actually doing my studies, based on the fact that I was always helping, always asking questions, what can I do, how can I help, without even thinking about being paid for it. I gave up so much time to learn, to invest, without ever asking for compensation. And once I completed my studies, there was an opportunity. I applied directly, I mean, bypass all the various red tapes, you name it, because of my relationship at university. The principal at the time in charge gave me the interview just immediately before actually graduating and say, the job is yours. And that's where my journey started in terms of becoming a computer lab technician. And during that period of time, I was able to do my A+ in terms of building the core foundation. That is where I actually was able to develop my skills of understanding how it is that computers operate, how it is that networks operate, how it is that they were able to provide the services that were required. And I built and used those skill set along the way, which actually elevated me to moving into network administration, which was my next job role. So I was able to use all of those skills, I mean, moving into my CCNA with that passion. I was very passionate. I had a drive for what I do in terms of networking. I mean, switches, firewalls, routers, you name it. I spent hours in those labs, looking at those blinking lights and connecting cables, going on roofs. I mean, working with Wi-Fis, and I mean, being within an educational environment also exposed me to work with audiovisuals, working with students, working with databases. So I was almost everywhere. I mean,
isn't that amazing? Just that your work for a university, just it's its own little city. It's like you have the yes. ability to be, because the ability to be exposed to so many things, because you and I have shared a similar career path. My first full-time position in IT was in networking at a university right after I graduated. So I'm totally with you on that. And yes, and you get exposed to so many different departments, but also people and students in particular. They can be a little demanding sometimes.
Can I tell you? So exactly. So, I mean, all of that actually prepared me for more senior roles, I mean, responsibilities, because it was now actually a point where I know was now moving from within the educational environment, moving into the corporate or industry, I mean, within a private sector industry, to be specific, within a petroleum, a gas environment. So you're now working more advanced, I mean, IoT systems, all of these. So I was pretty much thrown out in the deep at the point in time to be required to be responsible for all of these network systems. I was actually doing system administration plus being a system analyst plus being a help desk support, mm-hmm. being a computer technician. So all of these previous skills actually helped me to be at a point to deliver various, I mean, services to the various organizations. And that eventually, I mean, pivoted or actually provided me with the skill set required to now be where I am at in terms of cybersecurity, and particularly focusing on GRC, helping organizations. That's where my passion is, in terms of risk management, helping organizations to minimize, mitigate, develop programs to help them to operate, I would say, more securely in light of all the various threats that exist within cyberspace.
Well, I'm going to pivot a little bit from my normal script, and I'm going to ask you a question about your journey. You talked so much about the foundation of what you were doing in IT, in particular networking. How important would you say is that to someone to have that IT foundation before making a jump into cybersecurity?
I would say it's absolutely, absolutely important, super, super important. I mean, it's almost like understanding the OSI model. I initially, when I was introduced to the OSI model, I was like, what is this? I mean, okay, this they apply to, I mean, the real world in terms of what I eventually understand the operating system, the various layers, the physical, the application, that communication. So each of these layers have various risks, various vulnerabilities that exist. So when you understand how it is that these areas operate, then from a security perspective now, then you are now better able to understand why it is that cybersecurity applies and how it can actually be used to help organizations to be secure. So you do not have to be super technical as it relates to, I mean, networking and or understanding computers, but having those principles actually plays a very vital role. For example, I mean, if you get to cybersecurity, you are implementing, for example, security control measures, then you will not understand what type of security controls to apply or whether or not this actually makes sense without understanding the fundamentals of networking and security. So it actually has its place.
And some people may not realize this, but it's not a new thing. The OSI model has been around for quite some time. In fact, I started my career as a student technician before I went full time. And that was a little bit more than 34 years ago. And one of the first things I learned was the OSI model. So it's been around for at least a third of a century. It's not something new, but I totally agree with you. You need to have that foundation there. And really, when you're working in networking in particular, not just learning it in a book and actually doing it, you really understand it more to be able to secure. And the only reason why I brought that up is because there's so much of a debate about, well, entry-level cybersecurity jobs. I'm kind of the impression that there isn't really such a thing, because it's not like that there's an entry-level jet airline pilot. You have to have some, history behind it. So, well, one of the reasons why I know you and I had talked beforehand about getting together, I usually ask at this point in time what a significant threat to small and mid-sized businesses is, but we wanted to talk specifically about something that's very important out there, and that's artificial intelligence, generative AI. So my question to you to start off the conversation is, what do you feel are some of the specific risks that generative AI brings to small and mid-sized businesses today?
Well, there are no more risks when you think about, well, first of all, let me say that AI is wonderful. It's awesome. I mean, just like with every good thing that you have, there's always, those bad or negative elements that we have to deal with. But as it relates to the risk, I think the AI actually brings, I would say, a far more exposure. You know, exposes more information about what can be used against an organization or a company to make them vulnerable. I think that's one of the biggest things about AI.
And it's almost like the exposure is almost, could be very much unintentional, where it's like, you go out and you do a search and you put some information, say, in ChatGPT, but if you're not educated on its use, you don't realize that that's actually not a one and done, that information can actually sit in the LLM and then be used for other folks. And I think that's what you were getting at.
Exactly. I mean, I was actually referencing a case. I think it was recently a vulnerability that was discovered in, ChatGPT as it relates to typing in certain commands in terms of querying about certain, I think it was about the secret or code, something to that effect, that you could actually ask ChatGPT and it would be able to provide the secrets to actually log into various, Facebook accounts, and that was quite alarming. So those are some of the challenges that actually exist as it relates to AI. Secondly, the rapid pace at which the attacks are able to be, developed against organizations. So gone are the days when you had to sit back and to think about code. How can I develop? How can I write the various emails for carrying out the various phishing attacks? But in the split of a second, you can actually develop code just like that. Get information, reconnaissance, the hosting research is at the fingertip at a very rapid pace. And this, I believe, actually puts small businesses at a disadvantage in terms of actually keeping up to implement various control measures to mitigate and to defend against these attacks in comparison to various, larger, more, Fortune 500 organizations who are also even finding it difficult. So I think those are two areas that are very significant.
I think you pointed out something very important there, and that is the speed at which this has happened. And when you're talking about social engineering attacks, it is the speed that the criminals are depending upon. They want to start pounding you with things that to not give you time to think. And exactly. I would agree with you that generative AI, particularly ChatGPT, and generating, for example, like phishing emails and all that, but also getting information and really creating a more perfect environment in a like you can use the generative AI to come up with effective responses in almost real time. And if you start to combine that now with deepfakes, now suddenly you have deepfakes that are actually being fed information by generative AI. I mean, that's going to be something for all businesses to have an issue trying to fight against. So what do you think businesses can do, particularly small and mid-sized businesses? What's the best thing that they can do to counter this emerging and growing threat?
Well, as it relates to a deepfake, are you referring to deepfake in particular or AI generally?
AI in general. I mean, but deepfaking is part of that, because deepfaking, like the example I was thinking about was a few weeks ago where the $25 million was sent by one person in a six-person video call, but the other five people weren't really who they looked like that they were. So they were responding with information that could have been generated by generative AI, and they were looking and sounding like the people because of deep fakes. So that's that combination together.
Okay,
so
sure.
So I guess both generative AI and deep fakes, I'd love to hear your opinion on how small businesses can counter both.
Okay, sure, great. Well, first of all, I must say that there are no fixed controls, and I would not, if I was actually operating a small business, to say, I would not go for frameworks, I would not go for controls. What I would go for as it relates to dealing with this risk is deep research and awareness. Once you understand what are the possibilities of generative AI or deepfake, then you're better able. Because one of the things I recognize at times is that people try to apply bandages and apply, you name it, to solutions without actually getting to the core of the problem. Understand what it is that you're dealing with. And the more aware you are of what it is that you're dealing with, its potential, its capacity, what it is that this thing can actually do to organizations, and from a negative perspective, you're not able to say, all right, can I apply a control? Can I apply a particular strategy? Can I develop a particular program? What approach can I use? So this is an holistic approach. It has to be a layered approach. It has to be a combination of strategies, a combination of tools, a combination of people with the right skill set, a combination of people with the right vision, in terms of not just seeing AI as something that is bad to the organization, but seeing how it is that we can actually use it effectively to drive the business productively in light of the risk that exists. So there is no one cure, one fit, or one silver bullet to this issue or the risk that exists. What is the approach that is taken? It has to be a layered approach to deal with the risk associated. So being aware, the more you know, then the better you are able to develop the best defense mechanism for resiliency, continuity of your business as an organization. That would be my approach.
And fortunately, a lot of the standards organizations are realizing that effective governance of the process is a way to approach that. I'm thinking specifically right now of, I hope I get the number right, ISO 42001, I think it is.
Yes,
that's the governance for AI? Okay. So notice how well I segued into talking about governance and GRC. And that was intentional. I want to talk a little bit about your podcast, because I love listening to CyberJA and all that you talk about with governance, risk, and compliance on there. You have wonderful guests, and if anybody is listening here has not checked out that podcast, you really need to. But I'm curious about, I think I saw one of your LinkedIn posts at some point in time, and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And then I started listening. And to your point, I know you were very kind to talk about the virtual CISO moment in the beginning of the podcast, but yours is one of the ones that I don't consume podcasts much, but when I do, yours is one of the ones I go to. And I don't say that lightly, because I'm not a podcast consumer, even though that sounds weird, because I produce one. But how did this get started? Well, how did you get started, and what is your mission with the podcast?
Okay, thanks for asking that question. Okay, so it so happened that during the COVID time, I mean, being at home, I was actually very active. Well, I started becoming very active on LinkedIn and starting to doing all these various, I mean, certification in terms of being on Cyberary, all of these platforms that were actually offering training and practice labs. I was just taking these, building my knowledge. So acquiring this skill set, and I was sharing resources from a level. I was actually being on LinkedIn, I mean, sharing, giving information. A number of people started to reach out to me, because people started to see me as a subject matter expert. I mean, which I found very funny or ridiculous in my sense, that I really did not know much about GRC or cybersecurity, but people started to ask me questions. I started to have one-to-one sessions with people, and I was saying that let me find a way to actually share this information on a wider scale to help people instead of having just one-to-one conversations. So it was as a result of having those one-to-one mentorship, that actually started with the journey of CyberJA. I wanted to find a medium whereby I could actually share the stories of people's journey into cybersecurity, particularly their challenges and how it is that they were able to overcome, so that this could be a central repository of mentorship for those who are coming up into cybersecurity and wanted to excel in cybersecurity. So that's the drive behind developing CyberJA.
And that's a good point too. And that's one of the reasons why I do this as well, and why I've put out some other videos on YouTube, in that, like you, I started to get a lot of questions one-on-one. It's like, hey, you got 15 minutes or a half hour to talk about A, B, and C? And it's like, I would love to. But, and I have ended up creating a couple of videos. Like one question that I always get is, how do you get into cybersecurity consulting? Well, for anybody who's interested in that and the nuances behind it, I've got a video on YouTube, an hour and 40 minutes long, where I basically brain dump a lot of the things that I've learned. So I appreciate the fact that you're giving back to the community in that way. And that's truly a mission of service there. There is no other reason except to help get the word out. So, but I have to ask you one other question, though. It's the name of the podcast, CyberJA. What does that mean?
Sure. Thanks for asking as well. So cybersecurity and JA represents my own country, which is Jamaica.
Oh, so okay. You know, I that should have been obvious, but it's like I'm trying to think about, well, does it mean cyber journey awesome, or... I wasn't just thinking about it here on the podcast here. I've wondered about that since, and you probably have talked about it and I just missed it. And it was so obvious. It's like, okay, well, Now I know. So, and now everybody else knows too. So, well, everything in, and I love the fact that you're sharing, and it does help folks because, a lot of times when you're trying to learn, you're trying to get into cyber or you're trying to advance your career, you're trying to learn a new skill set, and you're also trying to do your job, it can get to be very much overwhelming and stressful. You try to do too much at once, and we don't have the time. And mental health in our field is a significant problem. I always encourage folks that they need to take a time there for themselves to get away and decompress and refresh themselves. What's one of the things that you do to do that?
Sure. There are no more things. I mean, if you look behind me, there's a little guitar there.
let's play together.
So that's one of my spare time things to actually unwind. And also very important is the fact that I enjoy waking up early in the mornings. I mean, talking about 4 o'clock, maybe 4 a.m., 4:10. And by 4:30, I'm actually on the road in the cool early hours of the morning, running. I will just keep just running. That's when I get to unwind. That's when I think the most. That's when I get all my inspirations and my ideas. And as soon as I get back, I begin to make notes. That's when I communicate. I mean, I'm a God-centered person. That's when I do a lot of meditation. So I run and I appreciate nature. I forget about technology. Think about people, family, God, relationship, all of these things. So I enjoy running, enjoy going to the gym. That's what I do. I mean, to unwind the challenges.
And the early morning, because I'm an early morning riser as well. I'm like I was up at 4:45 this morning, so a little bit later than you. But then again, my 4:45 was about 2 p.m. for you. So
exactly.
But yeah, you go out, and I don't do as much running anymore because I've abused my body for 40 years running. It's like I'm slow now, but I definitely enjoy that. And you're right. It's like you're in your element. You're in communion with God at that point in time. And very little distractions and from technology. And really, it does fuel you for the day. So I think that's an excellent, excellent piece of advice. Although I do have to admit, though, if specifically with running, I prefer to do my running actually in the middle to later of the day. And even I think I'd mentioned to you beforehand that I was stationed in the UAE 30 plus years ago when I was in the Air Force, and I would run then, but it was like I would run like in the afternoon, even though it was hot and sunny. You know, here in Tennessee, it's like, you know, it's not, we have a saying, it's like, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. In the UAE, you have pretty low humidity for the most part. I actually, you know, it could be 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and don't ask me what that is in Celsius. I have no idea. 37 something, I think. But I just always enjoy being out the run. I think for me, it's a break in the day, a reset. So, but I'm getting ahead of myself again, and I promised myself I wouldn't get off on too many tangents. So let me ask you about your future plans. What things do you have going on in the future that you're planning for?
Well, definitely developing my programs, my courses, in terms of actually creating a collection of courses that actually helps cybersecurity professionals. And one of the things is that I use my experiences. I mean, all of the courses that I actually, I mean, one of my main focus right now is on content development, using my experience, capturing all of those years of experience, listening to the audience, what it is that they're asking for. Mm-hmm. I mean, going outside of the traditional route and to package those skill set and alignment to help people. So that's one of my main focus, I mean, going forward into the future. I mean, as it relates from a business perspective, to become an entrepreneur, to actually starting to own my own skill, my own brand. That's my main focus. And of course, to grow CyberJA to help more people. So for them to see this as the ideal, if, I mean, no doubt, possibly the number one repository for cybersecurity mentorship and growth in their cybersecurity journey.
I love your story. I love your mission. And I love the fact that we finally got a chance to get our schedules worked out and we're able to talk, even with a little bit of technical problems in the beginning that we worked through. So, Richie, it was so wonderful talking with you. The podcast is, if you haven't seen it again, it's CyberJA, which is Jamaica. And it you can find it on YouTube and where else? Is it just the YouTube?
Spotify.
All of your podcast platforms.
All those platforms.
Just do a search, and if you're interested in learning not only about GRC but things cybersecurity, take it from someone who has the heart of a servant and is very much passionate about teaching and love your mission that you're doing, Richie. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Likewise, Greg. It was indeed a pleasure. I mean, thanks for having me. Thanks for the exposure as well. And you too, continue to do the awesome work that you're doing in terms of providing this level of information to the cybersecurity communities, in particular SMBs.
I appreciate that, brother. And everybody, stay secure.